You're listening to Enjoy Parenting. www.enjoyparenting.com. We're talking today about, I don't know if you would call it, what, unlifing?
Yeah.
How do you transfer the unschooling ideas and apply them to life? A lot of the people who are going to be listening to this are not unschoolers. And
right.
So, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can have or experience freedom and creativity even when you're participating in that particular system. So that's really what I want to talk about today, is just the general applications.
Are you, do your children go to school, Scott?
Nope.
You unschool?
We are unschoolers, yes. So what's the thing that you most want to share? Like the thing that you never get to share in other interviews? Or just the thing that you are most passionate about?
I think above all else is trusting your children. Just the word trust. People, I think, in our culture right now have kind of an understanding of that with babies, you know, in the subculture of attachment parenting, that we've learned to trust our babies, that they don't need to, quote-unquote, learn how to fall asleep, that they will in time when they're ready. And it's kind of extending and applying that trust to all these other areas that people are fearful of, you know, such as a child reading. But it's hard. You know, the older the child gets, almost the more courageous you have to be as a parent to trust a child in a culture that so doesn't trust children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing on Dr. Phil. I don't think that the word trust came out of my mouth, but that's something that I really wish did, because it's a really big part of who we are as parents, Joe and I, just trusting them and just, you know, learning how to be a partner in their life and not use power to, quote-unquote, get what we want. I mean, I think the realization, a huge one for me, was realizing how self-focused and selfish traditional parenting is. It's like so focused on obedience and totally meeting the parents' needs that how on earth can a child be parented that way and not come out of that situation like thinking that's what life's about?
Right.
Is having people meet your needs. Like, you know, on the Dr. Phil message boards, for example, the only little argument that came up, you know, probably half a dozen times was saying things like, our kids are going to be, or children that are parented this way will be very narcissistic and they're going to be lazy and not do anything. And I'm thinking, it's so amazing that the one fear that people keep coming back to is the result of a lot of people, you know, being parented conventionally, becoming narcissistic because parents totally insisting that the child meet their needs constantly. Do you know what I mean? So you're modeling narcissism.
Right.
And
narcissism is at an all-time high, and it's not because everybody's particular approach.
Right. And so I just want to shake people and say, it's such common sense to just, once you see it that way, like, I just want to say that to the world, see it from this perspective, and maybe it'll help so many people go, wait a minute, you know, the whole modeling thing, that's right. You know, it's not do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work that way.
Well, but, you know, this whole idea of counteracting narcissism by indulging children in meeting their needs is somewhat counterintuitive, because it's a sort of thing where you model generosity by giving them as much as you can, and then as they get older, they internalize that joy of generosity. But it's sort of counterintuitive, because the culture at large is framing things in terms of competition.
Right.
So that you have to learn how to not get what you want, that giving to someone else is perceived as a sacrifice rather than just expanding joy all around.
Right, that there's a winner and a loser, and sometimes life is fair and sometimes it isn't, and sometimes it's hard and sometimes it isn't. Yeah, I mean, that whole mentality is how we were raised, but, I mean, you know, the daily groove that you send every morning just brightens my morning, because I think when you're, like you said, it's so counterintuitive when you're raised the other way.
Yeah.
You know, because your intuition is kind of what was done to you. It's and so when you're tired or hungry, and it's hard to constantly be working on yourself, but when you're tired or hungry and you kind of revert back to your intuitive, like, yelling or whatever you don't want to be doing, it's important to try to refocus.
What are the things, not only in recent experience, but in life experience, that you feel have led you to this, I'm not sure what you would call it in a general sense, radical free living or
Yeah, it's amazing when I think about it. I never planned on this happening. I just think when you believe in something enough, it's amazing what can happen. And I think my whole life led to this point. I think, you know, being raised really conventionally and going through kind of a difficult childhood and teen years, and I just feel like I've always been maybe more affected than the average person with other people's pain, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I'll just throw this out there really quick, but in first grade, I remember there was this little girl on the playground, and no one ever really talked to her, and they used to make fun of her, and she was alone every time, and when I focused on her, when I looked at her, I was paralyzed. Like, I couldn't even play myself because I hurt so much for her, and that's always been an issue in my life. I get really focused on whoever's, you know, in pain and so forth, and so I think, to be honest, I've just carried that sensitivity with me to the point where when the moment my babies were born, I was so in tune with what they were feeling. Like, I just it's hard to explain. I just have really tried to remember what it was like to be a child myself, and instead of feeling as though I have power over them, I just become their partner, and I don't know. I just always wanted to help people in general and my children, and I just feel like I want to give back to people and show them how to live kinder and show them how, you know, conventional parenting isn't very kind.
Mm-hmm. But you were not really parented in the way that you're parenting now at all, isn't that right?
No. No, it was very conventional. I had my mother and my stepfather, and he was really young, and it was, you know, back in the spanking days, and yeah, we were pretty kind of roughed up my whole childhood, but never ever real looked at it like that at the time. You know,
You didn't have a point of reference.
It's amazing. Just processing thoughts now. I mean, I can't tell you how many times in the last, you know, couple years, just coming to this place of unschooling and, you know, how we live our life, just crying in the shower, just going, wow, all that time back then, I knew something was wrong and off, and I always thought it was me, and now it all makes sense. It was never me. It was just how I was treated, and to realize that you were kind of abused. I mean, conventional parenting can be quite abusive, you know, traditional parenting. And
it's all really relative. I mean,
oh, I know. It's so
well.
Like, I watched
higher.
The Nanny. Well, I'm sorry, Scott. You need to talk over you. Go ahead.
No. That's fine. You're watching Super Nanny.
I can't really watch it because it just makes me really upset. But just for an example, like, I can't believe that our culture can watch shows like that and see children being emotionally abused like that and just think it's okay. Like, when a child's acting up, thinking that you have to be meaner to get them to stop. I mean, the whole idea of modeling, I think people have a grasp on it, but they don't really apply it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I was listening to that interview of you on the homeschooling radio, and I was very fascinated by listening to the interaction between you and the couple that was doing the interview.
Mm, in what way?
In the sense that you come from pretty opposite ends of the spectrum as far as homeschooling is concerned. You know, that was at least my impression, that they were more traditional homeschoolers.
Yeah, very much.
And you're
so.
More radical unschooling. And so, but I was hearing you, both parties, you and they, were just really clearly bending over backwards to find common ground.
Right.
And yeah. I was impressed by that. It's a model for how everyone could be, you know. Just like, well, why do we have to look at what's different about us and emphasize that as a bad thing?
Right.
But just say, you know, look at what's different and appreciate the diversity, but also notice the common ground.
Exactly. And I learned personally how to do that through teaching childbirth classes for 6 years. I would have, you know, fathers in class that would be so against, you know, natural birth or these new ideas at first. And I just kind of learned how to meet them halfway, to be down to earth with them, to show them that I understand where they're coming from, that I used to feel that way. So I think I just kind of have had practice in the face of diversity of just being calm and collected and respectful, because I know that everyone's in a different place in their journey in homeschooling, for example, and maybe that couple didn't read what I read or know what I know, so it's that they just have gone down a different path. So it's kind of respecting that not everyone's supposed to think the same. And just honoring that, but
right, and that would apply not only to homeschooling choices, but to everything,
right,
and parenting for sure, and childbirth, and all those other kinds of choices.
Right. Thank you for pointing that out. It's funny, one other person mentioned something like that to me, and I didn't really realize it until after. But yeah, I just love people. I always try to come from the perspective that people are meaning well. You know, I think culturally, so many people have the attitude that people are have the worst intentions, I think especially with children, and I kind of have tried to shift my perspective to assuming everybody has the best of intentions, and this couple truly did, and I could have gotten debates with them about our beliefs, but, you know, overall, we have the same, you know, philosophy overall, I think, of certain things, so I tried to focus on that.
Yeah, that's great. I was wondering also if your La Leche Lee training also, it seems to me that they teach leaders to take that attitude. Was that helpful as well?
Yes, very much. Yep, very much. I had my La Leche Lee training as a leader at the same time that I was becoming a Bradley Method instructor, so they kind of went hand in hand, and I'm also a birthing from within instructor, which is a different type of birthing method. So it's kind of just a combination of everything, including who I am and, you know, defining my own philosophies and so forth. But yeah, the Lychee League helped so much. They're so great. They helped me become the person I am. The training as a leader is just, gosh, you get so much out of it.
Okay, so you sent me a picture of you and your family in Hollywood. on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in front,
yeah,
of one of those stars. And the star was Godzilla. I was wondering if there was any significance to that, or you just thought it was funny that the Godzilla had a star on the Walk of Fame.
That's exactly why, because we couldn't believe that Godzilla had a star on the Walk of Fame. It was all movie stars, you know, Bette Midler and, oh my goodness, you know, all humans, and then Godzilla, and we just thought it was the weirdest thing. So we had to take a picture of the quirky one.
It's funny to me because for me and my wife, we use Godzilla as a code word for imaginary fears.
And really?
Yeah, just sort of when we've been working through some really difficult things, and then we finally get that insight where we realize that we're reacting to a fear that isn't even real, we call that Godzilla. You know, it's just special effects. It's not the real thing.
Wow, that's funny. What a funny coincidence.
Yeah.
It was really, it was quite amazing. The hotel that we stayed at, that the Dr. Phil show puts you up at, is the Hollywood Renaissance, which is a very upscale hotel and, you know, five-star restaurant and room service. And I think we were the only people with children in the entire hotel. So it was so fun. And we were at the rooftop pool, and it was this very elegant pool. You could see the Hollywood sign, and there was like entourages and stars everywhere. And here we are from New Hampshire, just having so much fun diving in the pool. And it was just so fun. Everybody was just kind of watching us with joyful looks on their faces, and the hotel just felt our joy, and everybody talked to us, and it was just a really positive experience. I was just thinking about that when I was thinking about the Godzilla star.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got to get in a vacation along with the media appearance.
Yep, we did. It was great. We had a kind of a rough flight out there. They made a mistake. The producers booked us out of Portland, Oregon instead of Portland, Maine. So we're in Portland, Maine, and we're in line with the kids, you know, our first time on a plane, and it was kind of nerve-wracking. And they said, well, we don't have you, you know, booked. And, oh, my goodness, it was so hard that we called the producers, and they said, we have to get you here. We have to get you here, and we're going to figure it out.
So you almost didn't make it there?
No, we almost didn't make it there. I got 90 minutes sleep that night before the show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was really hard. And so they flew us from Portland, Maine to New York. We were supposed to take like a direct flight from Portland, Maine to L.A. Then we find out there's no such thing, so we have to go to New York. So we went to New York, and then we had like a five-hour layover, and then eventually got to L.A., and they lost our luggage. So the outfits that I had picked out for Joe and I to wear on the show were totally gone. We had no idea where they were. And I show up at the Dr. Phil set with this like old T-shirt with like Coke spilled on it or whatever for the kids from the flight, and oh my gosh, we were just like, we're here, and it was just really hard. We got dragged.
And what did
on.
They just pull something out of wardrobe for you?
Yeah, they had a room the size of, oh my goodness, you wouldn't even believe it, filled with just brand new clothes and shoes. It was like a store.
Uh-huh.
Yep, just for wardrobe. I think it was for the Jay Leno show and Dr. Phil. They kind of used the same.
Wow.
That I think.
I didn't actually see the show. We don't get broadcast TV here, but what came through in reading the transcript was that just from your words alone, there was a real clear feeling of calmness and centeredness and clarity. And there's a discussion board, and somebody was saying that, you know, about how well you represented that you didn't make people like us look kooky, you know.
Oh.
So I do believe I would agree with that just based on what I've seen, that you really did represent the alternative in the best possible light, given the circumstances.
Thank you so much. I just really believe in this, and I feel like we're just, you know, down-to-earth normal people, and that if we could explain to other people our perspective, if people would just want to learn and want to change and want to have better relationships with their kids, I know Joe and I could help them. I don't know why I feel this mission and this drive, but I just do, and I just always have since I've had kids, want to just share with people all that I've learned. You know, I'm going through my own path, and with one hand I'm pulling my family along, and I feel like with the other hand I want to pull our culture along and say, come with me, this is just, we can learn a better way. And that might sound totally corny and hokey, but I just feel it in my heart.
Well, that's certainly what drives me, and I love your use of the word pull, because pushing doesn't work. and just putting yourself out there as a sort of a lighthouse or a beacon, you know, where it's like, look, over here, you know, this is one possibility, and I'm not going to push you into it, but I'm going to let it be seen. And when you let it be seen, then people can decide for themselves, and we're just letting the people who are ready to let the dominator paradigm go come and check it out.
Definitely. I like how you share that perspective. I think it's been such a process for me. Like, when I first started learning about, you know, more peaceful parenting, I think Devin was probably around 7 months old, my first child. He's almost eight now. So it was a long time ago, and I remember, you know, at first I'd start parenting a different way, and then I'd have to tell Joe what he was doing wrong in my head. I'd tell him and tell him the right way to do it, and it was just, I was trying to control him for a long time, and was wondering why we'd fight so much, and so it was a process for me to, like, respect him and realize that the way he's expressing himself as a parent is what he knows, and it's his, you know, his right to do that, and so I had to kind of go into modeling mode to really, like, show him how to do this. Instead of telling him what to do, I had to show him how to be and just honor who he was. And in doing that, it was amazing. He learned so much. And so I think what you're saying is to extend that even further with people in our life, you know, to not only, you know, I think for a long time, too, I wanted to share people maybe what they're doing wrong with mainstream parenting and instead of just modeling it. But now, you know, going that step further and just modeling is all we really have to do and just be happy. And people are attracted to it. They're drawn to it. And you're never pushing against them. You're just, like, opening your heart and it all comes to you.
Right. And in the conflict-oriented media, they're always looking for the pushing because that's a self-perpetuating thing.
Right.
You know, if they can fan those flames, they just have an endless stream of drama that they can exploit. And so this idea of just modeling and staying positively focused is not as dramatic, but when you're in the middle of it, it's more fun.
Right. Right. I think that's what happened with the Dr. Phil show, to be honest. I really think that they were expecting, they weren't expecting us to be like we were. Mm-hmm. You know, that they really pieced together the footage, like the worst of, and they really kind of, I knew they were going to do that, and I don't mean to make that sound negative, but when I say the worst of, you know, they showed, like, the kids screaming maybe out of the two times that happened in a 12-hour period. So they pieced that together almost to make us look a certain way. But then once the show started, it all changed. It really did. Once people started hearing us, there was no debate. There was just kind of learning and listening and respecting. And I think that's why the show was so confusing for people, because it was really set up to be this, Dr. Phil's going to tell me how it is. And then he was like, oh, wait a minute, tell me more kind of attitude. And so it kind of fizzled. I heard a few people say the show was so confusing to them because it was anticlimactic.
Did you find yourself at any point, like when they started showing things with a negative spin, did you find yourself sort of at a point where you could have gone in a more adversarial or contrary way versus what you ended up doing, which was more just staying focused on your vision?
No, I didn't, because I knew that they would do that. I knew, and I thought it would be worse, actually, than what it was. So I think I had very realistic expectations. And in doing so, I was much more, I knew I had to represent what I was. You know, peace was something I had in my heart. And I told myself before I got on stage, I just said, there's no room for negativity. There's no room for any kind of emotions like that. And you're not going, you know, I'm talking to myself saying this, and I'd really, you're not going to go up there if you're going to show any of that, because there's no room for it. You're here for one reason and one reason only, and that's to help people see this wonderful way of life. And so be that. And I just became it. And I don't know how I did it, actually. It's just amazing. It was just like the energy kind of took over, and I just did it. So I never felt adversary. I felt joy. I watched that whole video and felt proud.
Never
felt like, how dare they? Maybe after the fact, I was kind of like, ugh, I didn't like how they kind of put that together, or, you know, after when I had time to analyze. But at the time, I was just proud to be there. I was proud to represent it. I was proud of everything that was on the video, because it was me, my family, and it was just, hard to explain, but.
And when you say there's no room for that negativity, in a way, you did make room for it. You just didn't shine your light on that end of the spectrum.
Right. Just stay focused on the joy rather than putting any energy, maybe that's a much better way to put it, don't put any energy into anything negative, because there's positives and negatives to everything. I mean, you could be either optimistic or pessimistic, and I choose optimism.
Your cup is half full, for sure.
Yes, exactly.
Probably more than half by now.
Right. Right, I hope so. Some days more than others, but that's another whole part of the conversation. How do we take care of ourselves through parenting this way?
Well, okay, let's go there.
Okay.
This recording is copyright 2006 by Scott Noel. www.enjoyparenting.com